Time to take another trip down memory lane in the good company of Keen Manning, who's been bringing us some fairly spooky stories of late. Keen, good to be seeing you.
You're sleeping well?
Well, I'm doing my best. You've been putting the frighteners on us the last fortnight or so.
I'm now kind of dressed like a cross between The Omen and The Exorcist.
Well, I wasn't going to comment,
so,
but...
So if you smell garlic, that is me. Apologies.
Well, now we know. A case of telepathy. Tell me more.
This is... Someone gave out to me recently. They were saying every time that I'm here, I say, this is one of my favourite stories.
There's just so many.
And there is just so many, but this is one of my favourite sort of folkloric stories. It's about the Hasson twins. There's a couple of different...
I have never heard that surname. Hasson. H-A-Y-S-O-N.
Yeah, it's unusual. As I said, there's a couple of different versions of the story. There's a relatively strong Cork connection to most of them. But this one is set in the 19th century, and I probably jumbled up the memo a bit because this is a Christmas-esque ghost story. So the two figures we're looking at today are Jack and Eli Hasson, and we're going to Christmas Eve. And around midnight, Eli, who is based in Waterford, is startled by footsteps along the quayside.
You can hear them there in the distance.
Yeah, that was Michael Flatley.
Indeed.
Well, it is.
What year are we roughly talking about?
We're looking at 19th century, so some of the stories kind of go to 1870. I've seen others put it at 1890. And like that's the beauty of it as well. It's like it's kind of like music. You know, when you see like someone interpret a song, they could put like a slight different variation.
Their own slant on it.
So when this has been told then as well, you see different things from each period crop up.
Well, Christmas Eve it is.
Yeah. Eli, after hearing the footsteps outside, approaches the window and he sees a man wearing a grey jersey and dark trousers who's running frantically towards Eli's house. Mm. Obviously, pitch black, Christmas Eve. He can't really make out who it is until... coming closer towards the house, he recognises it to be his twin brother, Jack. Now, the sort of unusual thing about this is that Jack is supposed to be aboard the Thomas Emery in Cork.
And obviously he's not.
And he's obviously not. So, again, many questions. Eli attempts to unbolt the door. And as he does that to, I suppose, allow his brother into the house, he witnesses several dark figures behind his brother. And it's as if they appear to rise from the river shore itself.
Oh, golly.
So I don't think it was any of the reindeers.
No.
I don't think it was Santa either. And like most of these stories, Eli is sort of frozen in terror. He's kind of powerless. He can see his brothers in distress running away from these spooky supernatural figures.
Whatever they are.
Whatever they are. And is just frozen. So he witnesses his brother Jack being overpowered by these figures. And he can hear Jack scream, "For God's sakes, help me." So eventually when Eli comes to and to react, he opens the door, runs outside, and he sees that the street is empty. Mm. So Jack and these assailants have also disappeared. So it could be a couple of different things, a vivid dream, nightmare, sleepwalking. We don't really know. So Eli goes back to bed, getting ready for Christmas Day. Christmas Day comes and the Hasson family receive the rather tragic news that Jack has drowned. He had fallen overboard from the Thomas Emery.
Wow.
And the...
So they're getting this news on Christmas Day. Obviously.
This is on Christmas Day, yes. So we've had the incident Christmas Eve night. Mm. And as we go into Christmas Day, then they actually learn that Jack has died as a result of drowning. The story they are told for the cause of his demise is that he was sleepwalking on the ship and just fell into the River Lee and drowned. Now, this is where we get the couple of different versions of the story. So there's an inquest apparently held. One verdict, rather, recorded as death by accidental drowning. Another version of the story records the verdict as found drowned. So even in two very simple sentences there, you could pick them out differently as an accident or found drowned. We don't really know what led to his demise. Like a lot of the great sort of Victorian ghost stories, there's a 20-year passage in time before we get some more detail about what possibly could have occurred. So at this stage, Eli is doing reasonably well in life. He seems to be a travelling salesman.
20 years on?
20 years on. He is in Cork and he decides to have a drink of an evening and he goes to a bar where the innkeeper or barman says, "It's actually a customer here who would like to talk with you." So you would think it would be related to business, perhaps. Mm. It turns out that the individual is a 90-year-old man by the name of Matthew Webster. And Matthew details to Eli that his son, Tom, had passed away relatively recently and had made a confession on his deathbed. So Matthew tells that his son Tom worked as a night watchman in the port of Cork about 20 years ago, and he noted that one night by the fire between his rounds, on hearing footsteps, he witnessed three figures, and he noted that the three figures, two of them had the heads of apes and the third of a deer, which again,
not something you see every day.
Unless, I don't want to comment on Cork, what sort of, I went to college there, but there could be
some odd things in your time, but still.
There is a deer park in Cork.
Indeed.
Of course.
Indeed.
So apparently he saw these three figures board a dinghy and they made their way aboard the Thomas Emery, which of course Jack was on board. And from Matthew Webster's telling of Tom's deathbed confession, that the three figures pursue a youth who shouts, "For God's sake, help me," which of course, if you remember, is what Eli witnessed Jack screaming, whatever vision that occurred that Christmas Eve. In order to evade these individuals, Jack jumps into the River Lee, but succumbs to the elements. And Tom, for 20 years, is kind of riddled with guilt by not doing anything, partially fearing for his own safety. And as each year passes, he becomes more regretful about it, until 20 years later, as he's about to die, he tells his own father the story.
Clear his conscience.
Yeah. We never learn of what the possible motive or who the perpetrators were that led to Jack's demise. But that is the Hasten case. It could be, sometimes they say quite often that twins have this sort of
telepathic ability.
Yeah.
I believe not just twins, but people who have a definite connection, particularly of a loving nature, that there's something there.
Yeah, I think most people, if you were to say about ghosts and spirits and all that, that they'd have a spectrum of regards where they would be on that.
Without going into detail, there was someone who's very close to me that a couple of years ago had an incident happen to them, and I swear to God, I had almost a clairvoyant vision of what was happening.
No way.
And I got a call later that day to say such and such a thing had happened many hours later, and I still think of that moment. Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing.
And that is as true as you and me are here.
And
now.
It's unexplainable.
It's unexplainable.
I think that's the thing. Sometimes when we look at these stories, or we look at history in particular, we try to find black and white, and it's certainly more complicated.
I don't know where that came from. Then you can make out. Indeed. Yeah. My golly.
Yeah.
Well, Keane Manning, another interesting story. Thank you so very much for possibly another sleepless night, but we do appreciate all your efforts. Thank you so very much.